beginning. I think that just to let you kind of behind the scenes, our launch team over the last 10 weeks or so, we've spent time together opening the Word. We've spent time worshiping, but we've also spent a lot of time just telling stories, telling our own stories, telling our stories of church, and we are going to be a church of storytellers, people that love to hear your story and to figure out how our stories interconnect and how our stories make a difference. And as a church, we're writing a story, and today is not exactly the beginning, but pretty close to the beginning. But here's how the story of God starts. Genesis 1, chapter 1, in the beginning, God created the heaven.
So that was 10 years ago. A church of storytellers. So this morning, if you don't know, if you're just happened to wander in here on a random Sunday morning, this is our 10th anniversary. This church started 10 years ago this morning. It looked like that. I didn't mean to flip there that quickly. We went and reenacted it on Monday. I'll point at some details for you. If you look at Maddox's face here, he tried to recreate it there. And then the other thing that cracks me up is check out Jackson's left leg, his sock and bare leg, and bam. I'll just leave that for a minute. 10 years is funny because it, in some ways, feels like a lifetime ago when our kids were that little. And then in other ways, just feels like it just blinked by, right? And if you think back to wherever you were 10 years ago, it's like that, right? Like there's in ways that it seems like it's been forever and so much has happened in 10 years. And there's other ways that it just seems like it blinks by. So a lot of this morning, I'm just going to read what I've written and kind of work us through things. So you never know what's going to happen when you start out on a journey. You just don't. Whenever you go on a journey, it can go lots of different ways, and you don't know where you're exactly going to end up. And the last 10 years have been full of challenges and heartaches and fun, and we got to yesterday kind of reminisce with Dave a little bit and look through pictures and all the fun, and we laughed about some of the things that we got ourselves into, and we'll talk about some of those this morning. And so what we're going to do for our service this morning is we're going to do a mixture of things. We're mostly, we're just going to do some interviews, and we're going to let people tell stories. What I said in that first service, by the way, I didn't even know that existed until you sent it to me. Vicky sent me the original sermon recording. I didn't even know it existed until this week, and so I listened to it on, I think Wednesday night I listened to it, or Thursday night, and I was really nervous. I could hear the nervousness in my voice. I was talking really fast and really nervous, and some of what I said was really good, and some of it, I wouldn't go to that church. Now, I mean, you know, if I had to ask all of you all, like, what did you think about X 10 years ago, and you had to have it recorded, you would be embarrassed too, all right? So, anyway, so we're going to do interviews, and then we're going to do, as we move through it, we're going to do some of the songs that we've done over the last 10 years and kind of move through a greatest hits of songs.
All right, so from Imago Dei Church, it's This Imago Life. Our service today comes to you in four acts. Each act is going to include interviews and a song. Each act will talk about one of the four distinct seasons of the church. Act one, small group, plus one, church. So it's gone down in kind of our life's lore. The first time I talked to our small group about leaving and going to church plant. So it was 2007. The first time I talked to our small group about starting a church, they all soundly rejected the idea and told me that I was an idiot. And part of it had to do with I hadn't really mentioned it to Jennifer yet, and she was like 8 months pregnant, and failed to mention that I was talking to other churches and church planning and all that stuff. And then one person supported me, by the way. It was my brother-in-law, and I always give him props for that. And we worked our way through that, but months later, I was nervous as I sat down for the first time with the Browns and Sluttons to talk to them and asked, like, what if we started a church here in Peoria? And so Jennifer and I were hopeful that they would maybe want to join us, and we didn't know if anybody else would even be interested in this at all. Had no idea. Wasn't sure. But we started, and we had the Browns and Sluttons over to our house, and we spoke the idea out loud for the first time. And so to tell you stories about the first era of small group becoming a church, I would like you to welcome to the stage Kevin Slutton and Vicki Brown. So I hope you all can see, we're just going to sit up here like we're sitting in a living room, like we've sat in many living rooms. This is the interviewing couch.
From the original office?
Yeah. I think that's the original couch from the original office. This is the original chair from the original office. This is the original rugs that we bought for the first service. They've been sitting back there getting all dusty for a while. So, questions. Let's start with Vicki. You and I have known each other for a long time, so you should know. The Browns and us, when I started right out of seminary 19 years ago, we did youth ministry together for 2-3 years. You weren't with us our first year, but then I think the second year you guys joined and started doing that with us. And so we talked about starting a church in Pekin at one point, the four of us, right? We at least played with the idea, and then it was dumb.
It was a very long time ago.
It was a very, very long time ago. So I want you to take us back to your first thoughts about the church. Like, what were you most excited and most hopeful about? And then I'll ask you your biggest concerns.
So Corey and I just, we left the church that we were together at in Pekin, and we're attending Northwoods mostly for the sake of anonymity. And so being part of that, and then you coming in as the young adult director, which is funny to me now, but I think I was...
Why is that funny? Because I'm not young?
No, that young adult ministry is a thing,
oh,
I guess.
Okay, okay.
So it just changed in how I view things. But I was most excited about the idea of having a safe place. My small group had become that, but for other people to experience a safe place that was also sacred, I think was one of the things I was most excited about. And one of the things, too, that we talked about early on was that we're not just going to be a church that we're not that, but we were very much like, who are we going to be?
Yeah.
And so I was excited about creating that space.
Yeah. Can you remember any of the one or two? I mean, obviously the directives were born out of that, but what was one of those one or two things that you were hopeful, I hope we want to be this kind of thing?
Community was really the main thing, and just the idea, I was talking to some people about this last night, that idea of we can participate in a shared imagination of what we could do.
Yeah.
So mostly that, it didn't have to be a set thing, but that we were getting to do it creatively together.
Yeah.
I was fine with most of the ways it would go. I just wanted to be part of it.
Yeah. And what were your biggest concerns or fears?
Your paycheck.
Oh, my paycheck.
I mean, seriously, I remember Corey and I just being I think it's going to be okay, but we don't really know. So that was really my biggest concern and fear. I don't know other than that. Corey and I obviously were talking about this before we came, and looking back, I'm sure that I'm glossing over it, as you do when you look back on things in hindsight, but I just remember a feeling of being all in.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so if I remember correctly, our first conversations were around our dining room table, which was actually your old dining room table that you gave to us. That little, that is now in my workroom and is a work table. It still survives. But then we formalized a launch team, and we started meeting at your house, and your house, Kevin, became kind of the epicenter of the early days of Imago. So tell us about your lifelong dream to start a church.
Yeah. Nope. I had no interest in starting a church, being in church leadership. Just, it wasn't something that I ever envisioned, something that I ever dreamed of, but I loved what we had in our small group community, and Charlie is the best teacher I've ever known. And so that, when he said, we want to do small group only with more people and keep that intimacy, and I get to continue to sit under his teaching, and that was super attractive to me and to us. So it was an easy decision. I don't remember telling you you were crazy part.
Yeah, it involved us moving to Denver and...
Yeah, I was pretty adamant about that not happening.
I think moving to Denver sounds delightful. But,
tell us, either one of you, I don't care, I didn't put this on the script for you, tell us what the first that launch season was. We had like 10 weeks where we met in your basement. So, this wasn't a picture of that. I don't know that I have a good picture of that. This was like an information meeting we had in your yellow, bright yellow, wow.
Yeah.
This was like an information meeting we had. But then when we started in the launch season in January, we were in your basement. Tell us about those services and then we'll transition.
Well, one of my memories of that period was the week between Christmas and New Year's, where we knew we were starting a church in our basement, and our basement was cement. And we did Young Life down there, but that was a bunch of high school kids, and we just sit them on the floor on carpet squares, and they were fine. But we're like, we're going to have adults in here. Maybe we should do something. So everyone just pulled together, and there were probably 10 of us working nonstop for a week, getting ready for the launch services, and put up walls and a stage, and it looked pretty good by the time it was done.
Yeah.
Corey Brown was at our house till all hours of the night for 3 nights in a row, taping and mudding and drywalling and all that. So that was really cool, just to see the community come together, and then the fact that it was our small group, one other small group, and then just kind of a collection of people that had known you and were interested in following you wherever you'd go, and it was fun. And the response from that night at our house, that informational meeting, everyone's like, oh yeah, let's do this. This sounds great. So I think we quickly figured out that we could, even if we didn't grow beyond those 45 people, that we could probably do this for quite a while. So I know it was super scary to you, I remember, but I think Corey and I were like, we got this. No problem.
I think one of the things that really got solidified during those 10 weeks was the idea that everyone is welcome. That even though we were just the launch team meeting, we were all poising ourselves to, like, we're opening the doors wide open. Yeah. And anybody, this is for anybody and anybody, everybody who wants to commit to it.
Yeah.
And out of the launch team era came the 5 directives, and we landed on the Apostles' Creed. Those, you know, what are the fewest number of things we can disagree over? And that really became core to some of it. And just being open to the next step. I mean, we didn't know what we were doing. We were making it up. And I
still are.
But I mean, that's when you're in that space.
Yeah.
It's you give the opportunity for the Holy Spirit to work.
Yeah.
And I would say that those specific times and meetings were just keep doing the next thing and trust that the Spirit's leading you, and He did.
Yeah. Well, what I'm going to do, by the way, at the end of each interview is do this, is I want everybody that was part of that launch team that met in Slutton's basement, will you all stand up, and everybody else can welcome them to the church back then. So go ahead, stand up if you were part of in the basement. Yeah. You guys should stand up. So, all right, so I'm going to stand up. We needed musicians. So go ahead and start coming this way. So at the time, we were starting to look for, like, who can lead us and do our music every week. And Adam Bloom and I knew each other because when he was a college student at Bradley and I was on staff at Northwoods, I think Jake Bland connected us, and he led a ministry called Worship at Full Volume, and I would come speak sometimes, but we just developed a friendship out of that, and we get together at One World once a month or once every couple weeks. For years and years we did that. And so we asked Adam to be our worship leader. And so Adam and his wife, Corey, they live in Chicago now, or in the suburbs at least, and I am so excited that he's here this morning. So the song that he's going to do is the very first song we did on the very first Sunday of Imago Dei Church, called Invitation Fountain. It's an old Vineyard song. So would you, do you want to say anything before you play, or?
No.
Oh, yeah.
I think that was a pretty good cue up, yeah.
So why don't you stand up, and we'll sing this song together. You can have a seat. Act 2, Gateway to Peoria. I remember driving around Peoria with one of our launch team members, and we were going to go visit the hotels at the corner of 74 and War Memorial, you know, like where Cheddar's used to be and what the revolving restaurant there, whatever it is now.
And we were looking at like ballrooms and hotels and that kind of stuff, trying to find a place to meet. And we were talking, and on a lark, we decided, like, why don't we call the Gateway Building? And thinking there was no way our budget was going to afford such a beautiful space. And turns out that the Gateway Building is really expensive if you want to have a wedding there, but pretty cheap if you want to do anything else. And they were always open on Sunday mornings. And so we were surprised, but it worked out that we got to go to the Gateway Building. So can my crew from the Gateway Era start coming up here? And there's more than two of you. So there's seats on the back of the behind the couch as well. Steve, where are you? You're supposed to be coming up this way. Sarah's already here. Yeah. And so for a year and a half then, we bought ourselves a little trailer. Adam and I think it was mostly Adam and I and Kevin Kratz worked out a sound system that packed in our trailer. And so every Sunday we would have to like go pick up our trailer, which was at this storage place in East Peoria, haul it over. And so think about that, like on a day like this Sunday, by the way, happy spring. On a day like this, what that's like. And good morning. And so what I asked here is some of the folks that did... That's fine. Whatever. This is how it rolls. What I asked is some of the people that were part of that era to share with us. So on that first Sunday morning, we got all our stuff in a trailer and got there, and it was really a good place. And that's where the picture was taken from, and that's where our first Sunday was. So, all right, let me start with the two of you. And one of the things I'm trying to do, by the way, in all these is to help you see, like, the things that we do 10 years later, all of these were born along the way. So I'm going to awkwardly sit behind you to interview you. No, you're good. No, you sit there. No, yeah, this is awesome. So, Sarah.
Yes.
Tell us about the breakfast, because the breakfast started back then. So tell us, between the two of you, tell us the mechanics of the breakfast, how it worked back then, and some of the fun stuff about that.
Okay, so the breakfast originated pretty organically by a couple named Tom and Holly Schmidt, who... saw it in their hearts that there were many homeless people gathering under the bridge on Sunday mornings, and they wanted to feed them. So they started by going to McDonald's and buying sausage biscuits and handing them out to 10, 15 people. And then more and more started coming, and they realized we need a space to host a bigger type of breakfast for the homeless community. There was a need in the community that there was really no soup kitchen or meal being served on Sunday mornings. So our office at the time was down...
You don't have to look at me ever.
Okay.
It's fine.
Our office at the time was downtown next to Richards. It was a little office on Main. And we gathered a team that wanted to...
It was next to the Nut House on top of Richwoods. Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Which makes sense, yeah. So we used this tiny little office as a space to start a breakfast. We called it the Homeless Breakfast. And there was a small team of us, Steve and Leslie and myself and Holly Hamill and Bethany Threw and I think Justin Ganshaw and Blake and Becky Benovich, Cal and Katie Endress. I'm looking around at people who are still with us, but a good small team. And we started just organically bringing food in crock pots and serving more than just sausage biscuits from McDonald's, but we would actually bring biscuits and make gravy and bring hash browns and scrambled eggs, much like we do today. I don't know.
I'm a space person, and I swear that where we worked or served was the dimensions of this center aisle. And we had a row of single tables, and you literally had to walk sideways to get past the people that were sitting there. And it's funny how we remember things. We're reminiscing, and she says, "Boy, that was so intimate." And I'm thinking, that was just crowded is what that was. It's like, but it was our start.
It was so crowded, though. How many people could you serve at a time?
About 20.
So picture this, down of Richards on Main. 20 people would go in and eat, and then there'd be a line standing out on the sidewalk of people waiting to get in, and you fed them in shifts, right?
Well, I think we were serving many more than 20 initially, and then someone got upset and called the city, And so an officer comes out on a Sunday morning at 6 in the morning, fire marshal, and says, you're over the limit. So then we had to have a quota.
Okay.
So every Sunday we'd march in, whatever, certain number. And this is what I felt. This is terrible. I just felt so bad in the winter, those months. All these guys and women standing outside waiting their turn to have a meal.
But we always made sure that they felt served, like while they were there. It wasn't like a buffet. We wanted to give them all a chance to sit down, and we would serve them a plated breakfast and give them a chance to have some time and eat. But then we did kind of have to scurry them out, like, okay, next round. But that's how it started.
I love that. That's where the seed of that was. It's like, we want to serve them. You sit down, we'll bring the food to you. And that was a big deal.
We brought coffee pots and juice around and served their drinks too.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, so let's shift to the Gateway building. So both of you were drivers that helped us help haul stuff. So give people the mechanics of how that works at the Gateway building, because it's awkward.
Yeah, awkward is a good word for it. So I've always had me a pick-em-up truck, which means that I always help friends move. And then I started going to a church, and I didn't realize they need you to help them move every week. There are no pictures of that truck either, because it was butt ugly.
Yeah, yeah. I'm interested in that.
Oh, right. It was Adam's truck that I bought off of him. Thanks for the good deal on the truck, Adam. So it's kind of boring to talk about all the details because it's just logistics. But yeah. I remember the trailer was at the Crow's house, which was awesome because it was like five or six blocks from my house. But then we started keeping it down by the Paradise. So every morning you have to wake up early, go to the Paradise, hook up to a trailer, bring it back to the Gateway, back it in, unload it.
It just storage space, not just like parked down by the river.
Right. Yeah. And one of the funny things I learned, I guess, is at any church plant or probably like any startup in general, you just sign up for stuff, you don't know how to actually do it. So Charlie and I were like, our families were walking from one restaurant like back to our cars after a service, and he was like, you know what I realized? You have a tow package on your truck. And I went, oh no. I do. I better learn how to pull a trailer. So the first time I pulled a trailer was pulling that big one.
Me too.
Yeah, right.
I went and got a tow package put on my old CRV. Just to tow it.
So yeah, you just sign up for stuff and you go, well, I'll figure it out as we go. And then sometimes there's like festivals going on down there and you have to like back up in between lemonade shake-up stands and other carny stuff. Yeah. You got any more to add to that?
It was always kind of awkward. I didn't have to do it too many times, but I always was involved with the unloading of the trailer, which was always a treat because you had to go up an elevator to get all the stuff in. So it was unload the trailer, put like one of the roadie boxes on the elevator, ride the elevator up, dodge the sometimes unpleasant cleaning staff that was in there. They would, they were like mad that you were running the space sometimes.
Well, because they were still cleaning up from the drunken wedding parties
right,
the night before.
They were still striking
and we were coming
everything
in for church.
From the weddings.
Yeah.
And it was fun. Yeah, they did. They
so
were very.
Tell us about the services, just for a minute. We got to keep moving. Tell us,
The biggest thing for me was that very first service because, again, you know, we were there so much earlier getting everything ready, and I remember that tension and the excitement for just getting ready for, like you were saying, we were getting ready for opening the doors to everybody else. And the great thing about that space is you have this huge, huge, huge glass front window looking out over all the parking and everything. And so many of us were just kind of standing there looking out over that and watching people roll in and walk up. And there was just so much energy in that and watching like this thing finally happen that we had kind of talked about. And it was amazing. And then from that became a thing of also watching people that had come to the breakfast, watching them come down from Main Street from the office after breakfast to come down and join us for service too, because that became an organic extension of the breakfast. I mean, the whole thing was just amazing. But then, you know, like he's saying, you just kind of get hooked into this whole like, oh, well, that was great too. Service is over. You got to unload and break down all this stuff, load it back into the thing, go back down the elevator, put it back in the trailer and take the trailer back over to East Peoria. So it was immensely labor intensive. And I think the whole thing was just us
dying to get a permanent home so we wouldn't have to do that anymore. We didn't, it wasn't something that I don't think anybody ever was like bitter or dreading. It's just that you were tired at the end of it. And then you'd see your friends go off to lunch afterwards and you're like, man. And so there was another different group of people that had to do that stuff that would also go, you know, had their own schedule. But yeah, it was, yeah, late lunch.
Awesome.
Linner. But I don't know, that's about it.
Good. How about everybody that started attending Imago during the Gateway building time? Why don't you all stand up? And the rest of you can welcome them to the church. Awesome. So we hired our first staff member 6 months in. Dave came and joined us in September. And the same truck went to Wisconsin. And so I was trying to think of a song that captures the Gateway era for us. And we don't do this song a lot anymore. I think the last time I saw we did it was about a year ago. But the song that we're going to do is called Words to Build a Life On. And when I think of the Gateway era, this is the song. Beth is nodding, so yes, I got it right. What's that? Yeah, so it's a song that Dave found on that Mike Crawford album. And I remember the first time I listened to it, I was driving into church one morning on 74. I lived out at Broomfield at the time, and just crying the whole time I read it. And I think for the first listen to it, and I think the last time we sang it here, I got teary again. There's just, every time, there's different lines that just hit me in a different way. And so we're going to sing it this morning, so will you join us? So Gateway Building, we eventually need to find a space where we could call permanently home. So Act 3, the building Floyd owned. If you don't know why we're laughing, we somehow ended up in a, we searched all the warehouses in downtown because we had grand plans that we were going to remodel and all these things, and then found out that's really expensive to do. And so who knew that meeting in a church would be the best place for a church to meet? And so we found this beautiful building. It was on the corner of Arcadia and Bigelow. It looked like that. Except the only problem with it was this building, a church owned it, and so they were really willing to work with us and stuff. This was owned by an individual named Floyd, leave his last name off. And it just, we had all kinds of things happen with that building and with our landlord. He was a character, and spent many meetings talking about our landlord and laughing a lot. And so, let's see, what was I going to say about it? So we moved into this building. Let me show you a couple pictures, because it was a really pretty old building. Dave was reminding me last night, though, that it was always super hot in there or super cold. It was never in the middle. It was just one of those two extremes, either because the air conditioning didn't work, nor did the boiler very well. And so it was always kind of an extreme. We were always like, so this is the sanctuary. This is an Easter Sunday of some sort, and Zach is leading worship. I don't know why Zach was and you weren't, but whatever. And Becky, do you remember those things you made up on the things on the side? I saw those last night. I was like, oh man, Becky made those. They're still back there, I think, somewhere. And then the other thing that people mentioned from this era is this room. This is the chapel that was next to the sanctuary, and it sat like 12 people. And it was a space where we did a lot of things that we do today started back there. And so I asked Dave and Vicky to come up. So for those of you that don't know Dave Crow was our first staff person, whatever. We did have an intern before you. We had Tyler Murphy came an intern for us, and then Dave. And then we had the intern. So I have a couple more pictures I want to throw up, but let me talk to you guys first, because I want to talk about this era of the church. So, Vicky, I'm going to start with you again. Let me see what I have for you. So moving into a building gave us an opportunity to do like adult education stuff. We'd never had like adult Sunday school classes, because in the Gateway building there was the room. And then there was a children's room. My kids and I, we explored the other day while we were there on Monday. And this kid's room was like maybe twice the size of my office. It was tiny.
And so we didn't have a space to really do like adult Sunday school classes or anything else. And so in that era, we kind of did that. So tell us kind of what you were excited about with moving into that space, adult education, and then I want to ask you about this room.
So I think the thing that, so I was sitting at the formation team that time, and we were just, like you said, excited to do adult education, just the next step for what it meant to for people to be formed in the image of Christ and how can we resource people to do that. They were essentially electives, just people who were interested in sharing something with the body. How can we facilitate them learning more about a specific topic? And there's a huge variety of classes. We had classes on Paul. We had classes on Myers-Briggs. I think we entertained even the idea once of like running a CPR class. I don't know that that materialized, but there was
we did a church history class.
Yes.
We did a ton of classes.
I mean, there was just a lot. And the thing that I remember about that, not only the variety, but there was actually a teaching team that existed during that phase of the church. And it was just populated with people who were very passionate about helping people go to the next level of their intellectual development of their faith. And so that's what I remember a lot about that was the teaching team.
That's cool.
Not only for Sunday school, but also brainstorming sermons with you and things like that.
So tell people about this space. Now, when Dave says that it was cold, this room, I remember doing some early morning things there where it was like coat and hats and gloves. Yeah. And it would take like an hour for it to warm up right as we were getting done with whatever we were doing. It was starting to warm up. Tell us what happened in this room.
So this room, they would pray every morning before the service. This is where that happened. And there were people who joined in the prayer team for the service that weren't part of any specific team at Imago. Seth Ben Ezra was one of them. He's very faithful in coming to pray in that room. We did baby dedications in there. We started people who wanted to learn about prayer. There were some classes that took place there for very specific prayer topics like prayer beads or how to pray the liturgy. We did a launch party for Shane Claiborne's book called Common Prayer, Liturgy for Ordinary Radicals. And that's really when the love of liturgy of this church started, was birthed out of this new book, highly based off the Book of Common Prayer, but a little bit different. That's where that started. And the other thing that I was remembering is that...
Let me jump in. Like, basically, the things that live in the formation communities now, so we talk about the formation communities here, a lot of the practices and the ways that the formation communities happen started here.
Yes, absolutely. But one of those practices was there used to be community journals in this space. And one of my favorite quotes of all time came out of that, and it's from Seth Ben Ezra. He wrote it in a community journal, and it said, change is scary, but stasis is worse. And that, I think, became very important to me as the church continued to grow. And absolutely, the space to be present, to be who you are, the formation communities were absolutely born out of this.
Yes. And
because this space was about going to the next level. All the things that happened at Arcadia, I think, were about going to the next level. And I don't mean like in superiority or anything like that. I mean like a mature, deepening understanding of who you are as a Christian. And the absolute formation communities were born out of that.
Yeah. And the other thing that was born, I'll say one last thing and I'll talk to Dave, is Longest Night was born in here. Dave and I met with our friend Michael Danner, who told us about this tradition called Longest Night. And you and I knew nothing of this. So we like stole their whole service and we did Longest Night service, which I know for many of you is like your favorite service of the year. It started in this room with about 15 people that first year. And then it was so popular, the next year it had to move to the sanctuary because it was we had like tripled in size.
Yeah, there's a lot of worship stuff I feel like that happened.
Yeah.
I didn't go to the first Longest Night service because I had very small children.
Yeah.
My first daughter was born right before that, so...
Yeah, you weren't there. I knew, you were on paternity leave or whatever. Yeah. I don't even know if we called it that, but you just weren't there.
Yeah, just skipped it.
Just skipped. All right, I want to ask you about music, but before I do, because I'll transition to music, can we talk about the basketball hoops for 2 seconds?
Yes.
Because you bore the brunt of the basketball hoops.
It's true.
Yeah.
So when we moved to Arcadia, we saw a lot of opportunity we didn't want to be, you know, none of us lived in that neighborhood and we were aware of that. And I don't think we wanted to be a church that just like dropped in on Sunday mornings and then you didn't see us again. So it's very well intentioned to say, hey, we want to have an impact on this neighborhood. And oh, did we have an impact? maybe not the kind of impact we were going for, but hey, this is what happens when you're a bunch of naive suburbanites that drop in an urban neighborhood. And so we thought, hey, you know, there's all these guys that want to play basketball, and there's no basketball hoops in the area. Turns out
there's a reason
for that.
We learned later on all the local schools and stuff either chain their playgrounds.
They chain them up,
or
they lock
take
them
down
up,
the hoops
they take them down,
or whatever.
Yeah.
Nope,
and
not us.
So, yeah, we thought, hey, this would be great. Like, we can give these kids an opportunity to, like, play basketball. They can use our parking lot. So we spent some good money and bought nice basketball hoops, got them installed in the parking lot, and the kids showed up. But it got to a point where, so that whole thing about not being people that want to come in to a neighborhood and then leave, well, we all got to leave at 5 o'clock-ish every day. And the neighbors that live next door to the church had to live with the consequences of having a bunch of rowdy, like, basketball players next door to their houses. Turns out they didn't appreciate that very much.
Right.
So,
yeah.
We started getting calls. I had neighbors starting to show up at the office on, like, Monday mornings and be like, you guys got to shut this down, blah, 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 blah. And, like, again, don't blame them at all, because had I lived next to that, I might have felt the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Also got dangerous on a few occasions of reports of weapons being shown and things like this. And it just got to a point where, like, okay, it's not responsible of us to, like, just put these up and leave them. Like, that is not responsible.
So then the evolution, this is where it just gets ridiculous, is what happened every day.
So then every day the solution was, well, somebody found these basketball hoop locks you could put on top of the hoop, and it just, like, closed off the hoop, which was great, except for it meant that every day at the end of the day, one of us had to get a ladder out of the garage and go and, like, get the ladder up and, like, put these locks on the hoop. And you usually had to shut down a game of basketball that was happening.
So very unpopular.
You were super popular. It was really a great way to build a relationship with the neighborhood kids. Go and shut down.
Because they weren't the problem. The kids that played all day were not the problem.
Yeah, the kids that played all day weren't the problem.
The kids that were driving in at 10, 11 o'clock at night with their cars, stereos pumping, and drugs and guns. And
So,
we were just laughing last night. How many hours, Corey, did we spend in meetings talking about spending money on these basketball hoops? Like, it was like a couple years until finally Eric, the intern, came up with the best idea. We just parked the vans under the basketball hoops. That was the best solution in the end.
All
right, so let's move on. So a big part of the Arcadia era is that there are still at least a couple songs that we still do that we wrote while we were in the church at that time. And we had some good musicians go through at the time, and a lot of energy, and a lot of it is out of who you are and your energy. And so talk to us about the music, and the building itself kind of lended to that too. It was like a great palette for creativity.
Yeah, for sure.
And we recorded an album. That's the other thing I want to say and then let you say, which is this picture here of Zach working on the album.
We did. So I think for me coming, like, so I mean, Charlie was my youth pastor. That's how we were originally connected. I was working at a church in Wisconsin and then came back when Imago was starting. And part of what I wanted for the music and the creative side of the church was to be very connected to church history. I'd kind of come out of like more mega church environments where we didn't have sanctuaries. We had auditoriums, and that's fine. Like, that's a way to do church. But I was very interested in the idea of, like, getting back to this connection, this long Christian tradition, and pulling from all those. And like Vicky said, like, you know, that's where we started to work in liturgical practices and stuff. So, and I kind of seen a really great example of that through Jacob's Well down in Kansas City.
Yeah.
My brother-in-law was going to that church at the time, and they're in an old church building, and I've been down there several times, and kind of seen, like, how they were able to take this idea of, like, a modern church and put it in an old church building, and how beautiful that was. And so I liked the idea of, like, reconnecting with hymns, and we were rearranging a lot of hymns at that time. Like, that was kind of my go-to, 'cause And I knew eventually, like, I wanted us to start writing more again, like, very influenced by what Jacob's Well was doing. And I liked the idea that a church, as far as music went, could really kind of find their own voice and have their own voice. And, like, these are songs that are our songs about what we believe and what we, the way we see the world as a community of people. And it's not... It's not just about, like, being glorified karaoke on Sunday mornings, but that, like, the music was, and as a musician too, like, I didn't just want to show up and, like, play somebody else's songs all the time. Like, kind of, and the way I operate in DNA of my musicianship has always been about, like, creating and creating my own thing. And like, if when sometimes when you're like, you play music and people find out you play guitar, they're like, start requesting songs. And if you do that with me, I don't know. I don't do cover songs. Like, that's never been the way I operate. And so I really like the idea that, like, hey, maybe we could take a group of musicians and, yeah, we'll pull the best songs that we can find, but we'll also try to find our own voice and make this an outlet for our musicians to actually be a space that we can actually create. And Arcadia was just a great space for that because you just had, it was beautiful, and you just instantly would walk in and I think feel that connection to church history. Because there was a church that had been there before us, but then you had the stained glass. And and yeah, I loved during the week. Like, I wish I could have spent more time in there just practicing by myself. It just wasn't feasible because of said temperature problems.
Right.
Like, we didn't run the heat or the AC in there during the week. It was insanely expensive and didn't make sense. So I didn't ever get to turn that into as much of a practice space as I really wanted.
But that is the birth of Doubter's Prayer.
But yeah.
So we're going to do two songs right now. And one of them is written by Jeff Agin. And the choir is going to do that, the revival of the choir, here in a little bit. But before we do that, we're going to do Doubter's Prayer. So tell them real quick about how Doubter's Prayer went, and then we'll have you do it.
So, yeah, I mean, I get credit, I guess, for writing that, but that's not the way I feel about that song.
I know.
Song.
That's why I want you to tell them how it came about, yeah.
Yeah, because that song is... So that song particularly came out of a... I don't remember specifically what
the... I don't remember what the topic
teaching
was
about that week. But Charlie opened up this discussion about what are some of the, for some of you that have been on the faith journey for a long time, what are some of the questions or the doubts that you've struggled with along the way? And that was one of the most lively discussions like that I remember us ever having. And I think it got to the point where we just had to shut it down because of time. And so there was clearly like just a lot of energy.
You know what? It must have been a sermon on the Lord's Prayer. Right? Because that's that's where the song goes. I mean, that's where the song goes.
Yeah, I don't know if that's why I took it there or not. But I that discussion is, I remember where it came out of. And I just remember being, that Sunday, being like, wow, this is like something that really resonates with this community. And so then that week, I was going to start to work on music, and then just this idea for... being able to take that discussion and turn it into something that we could express as a community on a regular basis was really interesting to me. So, you know, I think I kind of, like, I was in the sanctuary, I remember, and kind of the first verse kind of came to mind, and I penned that out. And then I actually went back and pulled the recording from both services and... went back and listened through all the comments that people had and tried to take the, as people said, well, this is a question I've had or this is a doubt that I've had along the way. And I really tried to take that and then just, you know, put some poetry and meter to it so it fit in the context of a song. And just try to take that discussion and capture it within a song. Yeah. And then the chorus just kind of landed with the Lord's Prayer, which, I don't know, it was a nice. I struggle with complimenting the song, but like, but yeah, I think it just was a nice like centering for the juxtaposition between like these doubts and like where that chorus landed.
Why don't you go ahead and get in place and let me say a couple of things while you're doing that? Oh yeah, you.
I hope that everybody is hearing, like you talked about wanting to connect to church history. Yeah. We're creating church history even now.
Yeah.
And so looking back on it, I think that that's one of the things that we need to remember is that while we want to connect to the larger church as a whole, yep. we're being part of that and creating our own history, I think, is really valuable and, yep. and important to remember.
Yeah, and I think what I, specifically to this song in that, is that this song really is, I know we give credit to you every time we do it, your name is still on the screen, but it's really, it's Imago's song. It's,
yeah, I feel like, so there was, I don't, you remember
they
that?
Wrote it, yeah.
Yeah, and the kind of the idea I have about it is like there's you remember that TED Talk from Elizabeth Gilbert where she talks yeah, about like yeah, creative the genius, the muse, yeah. and like...
By the way, can I say a great memory? Yeah. Dave and I used to, when we were down in the downtown office, we would go get roly-poly for lunch, and then we would sit kind of next to each other at one of these high-top tables that we still have out here, and we'd watch TED Talks together.
Yeah.
That was our nice
that was our lunch,
lunches.
Yeah. yeah, back, yeah. yeah.
And watch so, people look at us through the window.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That downtown office was great. But in that TED Talk, she kind of talks about this idea that, like, when we talk about creativity now, we typically talk about it as something, like, somebody has. And we're like, oh, that person is creative, or they have a creative, they're a creative yeah. genius. And, like, she talks about this idea that historically, that's not the way we view creativity. It was something, creativity or art or poetry and writing, it was something that you captured. And so the writer or the artist, it didn't come from within them. It was something that they captured in that space. And I specifically remember with Doubter's Prayer, like writing that, like I was in the Arcadia Sanctuary, and it, probably because it was cold or hot, I don't remember what season it was, but like I went back to my office and I'm like, okay, I'm going to try and flesh this out there. And it just died. And I was like, I'm going to go back to the sanctuary because that's where...
The idea is.
That's where the energy for this song is living right now, and yeah. I just need to capture it. And so it was more like chasing after something and sure. capturing it rather than like expressing something.
But even deeper. To go another level deeper, because yeah. those words originated in that room.
Yeah,
and that's
exactly.
where they live.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so what's cool, go ahead and get in spot and get your band up there. So what's cool then is that this is still a song that we do occasionally, and it still kind of lives on. It was birthed there. And I still think that the words to this one are still true of who everyone in the room is. This is the things that we still doubt about and still believe. While they're getting that set up, I should note Kyle Rose is back on the drums back there this morning. And Stacy Brewer, now Bryant.
O'Brien,
thank you. I knew I was going to get that wrong. I was sitting there thinking, I'm going to butcher this. Stacy's back with us and playing violin this morning. And I think everybody else is our normal. Oh, and Sarah, people don't even know that you sing. Yeah. You haven't been up on the stage to sing in years. So, yeah, yeah. So somebody with us this week is like, Sarah Chapman sings? So, anyway, go ahead. Why don't you all stand as we sing this together?
Come before you today, Jesus, but I don't know how to pray. If I ask for things I think I need, is that just selfish of me? I want to have faith, Jesus, but I wonder when I pray, does it change anything at all, or do my words just bounce right off the wall? Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. May your will which is done in heaven be done on earth today. change. Jesus, am I following in your ways? Or am I just a rich young man? Jesus, how did I get here? Jesus, used to feel so near, but today I can't seem to hear your voice above. So many years, when will you come and make things right and chase out all this darkness with your light? A Father who art in heaven, giving me words to say.
In the
I forgot to do this. How many of you started coming to Imago during the Arcadia era? If you started coming during the Arcadia years, welcome all those people to Imago Dei Church. Go ahead. I want the Heights and Brian and Chris, go ahead and get up here. I don't know where you all want to sit. I'll work around you. So remember the landlord that I mentioned? He was stone cold crazy. And we just couldn't stay there, and so we started looking around for a building, and we, long story short, I don't see Bruce and Krista here this morning. Bruce and Krista Hare got married in this building years ago, and they knew somebody or something and said, you got to go check out this building. So Bruce Hare and I came over here on a weekday and checked out this building for the first time. And I think what I think of here is, if I think of creativity there, I feel like here is the space where our ministries have blossomed, and we've really kind of transitioned in some ways and become a clearer. We've had to take some stands about some things, and we've had to define more about this is who we are, even if it's going to cost us. And so I want to start with those guys first, and then I want you guys to come back and talk ministries. Talk to us about some of those, that defining moment, and how do you see things today? Oh, did I give you the title? Oh, Park View of the Cemetery. There it is. All right. Yeah. Yeah, thought it was funny, but it's not very funny. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just going to jump right in. For me, yeah. The defining thing about Imago was where we landed on issues surrounding our queer friends and brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. It was around the LGBT issue, and as complicated as that was, and as messy as that was, for me and my family, I think in particular, that was a defining moment. It felt like that was the place we could put down roots that aligned with our values and how we understood Scripture and the inclusive nature of the table of God. That's huge. I think, but also for us, the willingness to lean into complicated issues of race and social justice in ways that I hadn't previously seen that went beyond just an obligatory gospel message of trying to get people to sign up, like really trying to bring restoration to the community and restoring relationships between people who are marginalized and God and his people.
Yeah.
I think when I first came on the formation team, it was like the biggest fake out ever. It was like, oh, come on the formation team. It'll be great and you'll love it. It'll be, you know, we're wonderful people. And we got on, and then we dropped like right into the middle of a big steaming pile of hard conversations. So, but it was amazing to see people willing to have those hard conversations. I had never been in a place where that was okay and was valued. And so I'm not a big conflict person. It's just not my favorite thing to do. And so I've had to learn in the best possible way how to sit through things that are really hard to say and how to hear things that are really hard to hear and to work through that. So I'm really proud of how this whole church family has wrestled with not just the LGBT issue, although that's a huge one, but so many important issues about who are we really and how does God reflect through us and what does that look like? And that can be tough when you're all about including as many people as possible. Those conversations feel hard and painful sometimes. But what's amazing is you get through those conversations and that person stays at the table. It is a beautiful thing. And so many people have stayed at that table.
I feel like one of those moments, though, because I think what you said, Chris, there really made a lot of sense to me about, like, when you open up one issue, that was the thing that started the conversation, but then it kind of opens up lots of other issues. And I think of the Sunday after the Orlando shooting, and I don't know if any of you will remember that, but I remember I was standing there, like I always am, and I said, do you have any thoughts or feelings about this week? And I remember somebody over in this area was saying, like, I own guns, let's not demonize everybody who owns a gun. And somebody over here saying, I've seen in my LGBT friends that were scared. And just the tension of that moment, but able somehow to hold it all in this space. And to me, I'm putting words in y'all's mouth, that's a mark of maturity, to be able to handle that level of like discord, or not even discord, but handle that level of like intensity and hold it and to keep walking forward. Do you have something else you want to say, or I'm gonna?
Nope.
So Dustin and Christina, you guys, I think we figured out, you came on staff just like 3 months before we left Arcadia. And so you came on in June 1st or July 1st? July 1st, and we moved in like September.
Yeah,
so,
2013.
Yeah, so that was a little intense. So by the time you came on, we were already on our way out and getting here and then moving in here. And when you see the slideshow later, the slideshow ran before church, it'll run after church, and then it'll run at Fox Pub tonight. There's like 150 pictures. There's several of Dustin and I being ridiculous because we found lots of props around the building. So there's one of Dustin in a robe and a, I don't know what all you had. Somebody was holding that big Bible.
Bunch of choir stuff, yeah.
Yeah, choir stuff and big Bibles and all kinds of fun things. But I think here, when I think about the ministries, Breakfast Club always kind of went along, and the intern helped us start the Breakfast Club on a good trajectory, but I feel like here is where it blossomed. So talk to us kind of about like the state of ministries today, because I think this is where the ministries have really kind of become, you know, if the beginning was teaching and creativity, this is the space where ministries have kind of blossomed. Tell us about kind of the state of ministries.
Well, I like what you said, the word maturity, because going back to what Vicky was saying, in the early days, the leadership team just winged it, you know, just made up stuff. So yeah. I think we've taken down like maybe it was like 80% improvisation. That's like 75% now.
Yeah.
But the word that came to mind in this era feels like rhythms.
Because
we've been in this building almost 4.5 years or 4.5 years.
Is that it? Yeah.
And so it's like now we know like, okay, this is what we do Good Friday. Or, hey, every January we're launching a new formation community. Or in the summer, we're going to take off the kids' classes, you know, in June, July. And it's kind of like we've kind of tried some things, and the things that have gone really well, they're like, let's do that again next year. And we have a chance to remember, like, ministry fair, that's going to happen Vision Sunday, you know.
And it's, I think, not, that's really cool to see. It's not, are we going to do longest night? It's, we do longest night.
Yeah.
You know,
and
like,
that,
whatever.
The predictability of the space, I think, leads to that. Being settled, being able to put down roots, being able to mature a little bit. I mean, that's just part of the life of the church.
Yep. That's good.
So yeah, I started like, I don't know, some number of months after we came into this building. And I feel like one of the first things I took on under the, as the outreach director was the community garden. And so that was kind of our first step into trying to just make an impact in this neighborhood without putting up basketball hoops. And so they put up their own, so whatever. But
that would have been a better option.
Yeah. That's, they always get torn down though, unfortunately.
No.
So we started a small community garden, you know, and that was a bridge to be able to start more connections with the neighborhood here. So now we have quarterly events where people are in and out of our building. They know we're a place they can depend on. Even our Breakfast Club, I feel, has been shaped a little bit. Like, it's, the aim is totally at the homeless community still, but we have several people who arrive before our vans even go out. And those people are from the neighborhood. Those are people who might not even have to have breakfast, but they just want to come and be in community with people. So I think that's really beautiful. I also think something about being just established and set means you can kind of start dreaming a little bit more.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where some of this stuff with foster care and adoption has come from. Obviously, some passion inside of the two of us. But also, we tend to draw people who just want to make a big impact. And so I've loved how we've organically grown in that. The people in our community are like, yeah, I'm actually going to do that too. And I'm like, oh, you're new here and this is your second Sunday and that's, you came because you saw that on our webpage? Like, it's just amazing to me. Like, we're drawing social workers. We're drawing people who want to be in those kinds of families. And so I'm excited about that. And to continue to see the life of our church be lived out through the beautiful people here.
Yeah.
I think that's why I was teary earlier. I was just thinking about, like, a lot of people have joined us since we've been in this building.
Let's do it right now. How many of you started coming here in this building?
Yeah, let's do it.
Because it's probably half the
room. Stand
up. Right? Stand up if you've started coming here. Welcome all those folks. Yeah. See? Perfect. Thank you.
And a church is the people. So our church always develops as new people come. And I think those gifts and those passions and those things being lived out, I mean, who knew a group of ladies meeting on a Thursday evening would turn into 20 to 25 people a week as a hot mess sisters, taking care of one another intergenerationally, you know, I just think it's beautiful. We do whatever is needed here, whatever people are passionate about. And I love that. I love that the church is all of us. It's not just the people sitting up here.
That's right. a church of storytellers. Love that. I don't mean I love it because I said it, but it really has. It's funny when you look back 10 years and something I said, we are going to be this, and to say we still are. We actually are. We became that thing that we talked about back then. We're going to do a song that we do quite often here. For those of you that have come back, this has become the new tree of knowledge probably, and called Us for Them, that's really rooted in some of the social justice things that you've talked about in ministries. Before we do that, I want to do this. Can we acknowledge all of our staff? So we've had Dave up here and Dustin and Christina. Beth was with our Genesis ministry for a while. Emily was our first administrative assistant. Where's Emily? Back up. Stand up. And then Ashby, stand up on top of the pew, please. would you just honor our staff over the years and all that they've done? And for the record, Ashby is the longest running staff. She has been on staff the longest now. So, props to Ashby. She's winning. And I think you've moved into second place now. When I last did it, Dave was still in second, but I think Dustin's ahead. And Dave's not getting any more points. So, game over. So, just so you know, I know some of you, we've gone long. I was aiming for 10:30, so we're close. We're going to do this song, and then I'm going to say a couple things, and we'll move to communion. So I understand if you have to leave, just get going, but we're close. So we're going to do Us for Them, communion, and then we'll be done. So would you stand and join us in Us for Them? I won't be long, I promise. Two last people to acknowledge. One, 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago, I gave Danny like 12 songs and said, we're going to do all these next in 2 weeks. Can you put it all together? And Danny's worked his butt off to get all the musicians up here and coordinate all this and direct the choir. And then I have to acknowledge Jennifer, my wife. And she never gets up here. She doesn't... somebody asked if she would do one of the interviews. I was like, no way. But the person who keeps me going and keeps me in my place and in my place and is the person I go to and work it all out. And so really grateful for her and the invisible behind the scenes. So this is hard because for me this is the beginning of the end. 3 weeks from today I'll give my last message here, and Easter Sunday, and then the 8th and the 15th, and that'll be the last time that I get to sit up here in front of you all. And so putting together even the slideshow the last week and a half has been hard, and it's all kinds of things. There's so much in me right now that's it's fun and it's rewarding, and there's so many pictures. It was all of my kids and Dave and all of us kind of gathered around the counter last night looking through all the pictures and laughing and telling stories. And at the same time, you'll see when you look through the pictures, there's a lot of people that aren't here anymore. And the small group that started this church doesn't exist anymore. And people have moved away. And all these things that are just so hard. But what's exciting to me is that the church isn't any one person. It's not any particular group of people. It keeps going. And the church keeps morphing and evolving and becoming, and we keep becoming the Imago Dei together. And I love, this isn't patting myself on the back, I've loved just this morning about these different phases and different eras and these different ways of us figuring out this is who we are. And I don't think it's over here, right? Like, it'll happen next year and the year after that and 5 years from now and 10 years from now, if you gather again to celebrate, it's going to be hey, this is where we were the first 10 years, the second 20, and here's where we're going to be the third 20. And it just keeps on becoming. And the image of God isn't something that we ever just put our thumb on it and go, yep, we've gotten there. But it's always something that's calling us into a journey and always calling us to keep stepping forward and moving forward. And at the heart of that journey, what Vicky said in the very beginning is really my heartbeat, is that at the center of all that was this conversation we had very early on about what are the fewest number of things we can figure out to divide us, What are the least number of things that can divide us? And we wrote the five directives, and we came to the Apostles' Creed as a way of saying, you know what, when we come to the table, we're going to recite the creed as the thing that holds us all together. As no matter as people come and people go, and as we come and we go, and some of us have been here and left and come back, and wherever we are in our journey, this is the thing that keeps us together, no matter what we believe and think and wherever we're at. And so we're going to do the Apostles' Creed. I want to, one last note about communion this morning to give it a little bit of levity. I forgot to tell you this. The very first Sunday, we ran out of coffee. The very first Sunday we had church in the Gateway Building, we ran out of coffee. And then on our first anniversary, the first Easter, we ran out of bread for communion. And there was this panic look. I can't remember who was serving it. They were standing here, and I know I was back over there. And the person was like, we're getting low. And I was like, well, I guess we're out of communion. And then I thought, oh, wait a minute. There's animal crackers down in the kids' area. So somebody, I think it was me, I think I went running for the kids' area and went and like, well, I need the animal crackers. So Easter Sunday of 2009, we had animal crackers for communion. And last night, Sarah Chapman texted me and said, hey, I'm in the store. Do you want me to grab the animal crackers? So this morning, you have the wine station, the grape juice section, the gluten-free, or if you want to grab an animal cracker, the animal crackers are right down the middle for communion this morning. Let me pray, and then when I'm done praying, we'll cite the Apostles' Creed. Just thank you for this journey the last 10 years. Thank you for the people that you've brought along our way, and just some of the best times of my life. And thank you for that. And thank you that we've gotten to do this together. Thank you for great music and ministries and ideas that have come out. Thank you for this room, whether it was in the Gateway or Arcadia or here, this room where we get to share our stories and we get to share our ideas and we get to push against each other and figure out what we think and don't think. And I hope for all of us, we can say we've grown a lot and we've become more mature, like they talked about here at the end. Like we've become a better version of ourselves. And so help us to keep following that. Help us to keep becoming the Imago Dei, the reflection of you. In your name I pray, amen.